The Sunday Times recently carried a story about how educational psychologists, or at least many of them, are unhappy with the most widely used IQ test in South Africa. It's called the SSAIS-R. It stands for Senior South African Individual Scales Revised. On Skype to us at the moment is Vanessa Gaydon, chairperson of the Educational Psychology Association of South Africa. Vanessa, good morning.
Good morning, John.
Before we talk about the perceived problems with this particular test, is IQ testing in itself not a kind of obsolete, archaic notion?
That's such a controversial topic. So yes, some would say that it is an obsolete notion, but no, it's actually not an obsolete notion, in the sense that IQ testing still gives you an indication of a person's overall cognitive functioning, which does give you a sense of what level of functioning you can expect them to perform at, for example, in the classroom, in the workplace, that sort of thing. So it does give an overall indication. The arguments against it are that the original IQ tests used to include a number of different constructs, and you can't measure cognitive functioning in one score, which is a valid argument.
Are there other options for, I can understand that you would want to, or why would you want to know cognitive functioning? Why would you want to know that Johannes has an IQ of 145 and John has an IQ of 87?
Okay. So to answer your first question, yes, there are other options, and we can go back to that. But the important question of why would you want to know? The reason one wants to know is to get an indication of, let's just talk about the classroom situation mainly. The use of IQ testing is helpful in terms of determining what sort of level you can expect a child to function at. Having said that, just to give you a bit of background, in terms of your IQ testing, you get a full-scale IQ, which is a single score, which will put the person in the average, below average, above average, superior ranges, which is that single score. But then that score then can be divided into a number of different scores. In the past, we used to have the verbal IQ and the nonverbal IQ, which is basically all your language processing skills is the verbal IQ, and your nonverbal is all your visual, perceptual, motor, that sort of skills. Subsequently, those constructs of verbal and nonverbal have been further divided into a number of different underlying constructs, which are very valuable, particularly when you're dealing with children in the classroom, to determine, for example, if they've got language processing problems or expressive language problems, or if they've got visual perceptual problems. So it's very useful in working with children and diagnosing specific problems and particularly learning problems. It's obviously used a lot when you talk about brain injury or some sort of medical problem that affects the functioning of the brain. The testing can be used, number one, to look at what sort of level one expects them to function at, or whether there are developmental delays or damage or that sort of thing. So we use it basically to identify areas of specific strength and weakness, but your overall IQ doesn't give you that. You've got to look at most IQ tests are divided into at least 10 different subtests, and each subtest measures an area of performance.
Okay, we will get back to the are there alternatives, but before we get to that, how reliable are these tests in determining those things which, if they determine them accurately, makes them useful?
They're very reliable, provided they've been standardized effectively and accurately, and provided they are measuring what we expect children to be learning currently. So they are reliable, but then one's got to understand that no IQ test can be taken independently, or no IQ test should be taken and used independently to measure somebody and label them, because your performance on an IQ test is dependent and affected by a number of factors. For example, your emotional functioning, if you're fatigued, if you're sick or well, a whole lot of current circumstances. So none of us use the IQ test in isolation. We use it, we collect collateral information, we do clinical interviews, we get feedback from teachers or educators or people. So they're never used in isolation, or they should not be used in isolation.
Yeah. And are there alternatives available which don't get used much, because actually the IQ test, if it is administered properly, then is the best option available? Might there be other alternatives and people haven't really looked for them because, hey, why should we? We've got the IQ test.
There are alternatives available. So we've got aptitude tests, but they have their own sort of minefield. So there are different forms of aptitude tests. There are a whole lot of different forms of cognitive profiling, but all of them are based on the same sort of underlying constructs. So, you know, when you're looking at what sort of level to expect a person to function at, how you can provide a person with support, how to remediate them, they're not really alternatives. I mean, you can go to the underlying constructs level and look at a child, for example, look at their reading, look at their numeracy, that sort of thing. But for example, if you find a child has a problem with reading, it could be auditory processing, it could be visual processing, it could be a whole lot of different factors. And if one is able to interpret an IQ test effectively, where we look at their strengths and their weaknesses in a number of areas, there isn't anything better, particularly when one looks at the international standards of the Veszler tests and tests that have been very, very well researched over a long period of time.
We will, I promise you, get to the reasons for concern about the most widely used test in South Africa. But I'm just, for myself, and I hope for the listeners, trying to get some background to this. So these tests are useful if they are done properly and if the result is not viewed in isolation. How often are those two conditions met in the context in South Africa in which IQ tests are administered?
Well, you have to be registered and qualified to administer the tests. You have to be qualified as a psychologist. Well, you can be actually qualified as a psychometrist who can administer the test. And then if you're qualified as a psychologist, you can then do the interpretation of the IQ testing. So how often are they administered appropriately? I would hope and I would trust that generally you can't even purchase the test if you're not registered with the Health Professions Council.
So probably considerably more often than not. So let's then go to the SSAIS-R, the Senior South African Individual Scales Revised. On what grounds are educational psychologists like yourself unhappy with this test?
Okay, for a start, it's a very old test. So it was established in the 60s. It was re-standardized and re-normed during the early 90s. However, when it was standardized and re-normed, a lot of the actual material was not modernized. So, for example, we've got, if you look at a person's general knowledge and that sort of thing, there are things like cell phones, computers, that sort of thing haven't been included. One of the pictures in the SSAS that's used is of an envelope with stamps on it. And we've got a
I can imagine the 11-year-old looking at it and going, what the heck is that?
They don't know what it is.
Yeah.
And, you know, most children don't know. There are quite a few pictures. So that's a problem, is that they're very old and they're certainly not suitable for your 21st century child or young adult. But they're also very Eurocentric still. They're not applicable to the majority of the South African population. And very importantly, they have not been standardized on the majority of the South African population. So these tests are language specific, they're culture specific, they're dependent on your educational background, and none of those factors have been taken into consideration in the development of the norms, because all of these tests use age norms. So a child's performance is compared against their age group and compared against a standardized normed group.
And the standard Are they always administered in English? So if somebody is a first language Xhosa or Afrikaans speaker and they have to take the test in English, there's an obvious disadvantage there. Or are there available tests in all 11 official languages?
Okay, so the SSR is specifically standardized to Afrikaans and English speakers. Some people will have an interpreter in the room, and so the test will be interpreted. The problem with that is that there are words, for example, like patriotism or galaxy, referring to a galaxy of stars, or an emblem referring to a flag. Those, a lot of the words in the vocabulary subtest, for example, are not, you can't interpret them directly into particularly the black languages. There is a set of tests called the individual scales, which are supposed to be a equivalent to the SSR that have been standardized to a number like Southern Sotho, Northern Sotho, Zulu. However, the development of the tests and the norms used are, while most of us question them, they generate very, very elevated IQ scores. For example, I do a lot of work with children with traumatic brain injury where they're not functioning, they can't read, they can't even identify letters, and yet they'll come out on average. So very few of us use the individual scales any longer.
So we're running out of time, and a couple of things I still want to get through. Just give us an example of the kind of culture-specific questions which are asked, and there's a much better chance of somebody growing up in that culture answering that question correctly and so elevating their final score than somebody who doesn't grow up in that culture.
Just as a simple example, one of the comprehension, which is basically a common sense judgment and a social judgment, there are questions like, why are buildings and cities usually very high? If you're testing a child from a rural environment, they're not taught that, they don't have that as a background. A lot of the questions, why does one make a will or a testament? The questions are not relevant to the majority of the South African children, particularly children in rural and disadvantaged backgrounds.
And then, is this unhappiness likely to lead to, a modernization and a proper norm standardization for South Africa? I would imagine it's not a cheap exercise to do, to bring this test fully in line with our different cultures and to with modernity rather than 30 years ago, and things changed an enormous amount in 30 years. Is it likely that there is going to be an upgrade of this to remove most of the concerns that people like you have?
Well, we've been calling for it for many, many years, and there is the option. There's what we call the Veszler test, which is the international standards, which have been very extensively researched and are excellent tests in terms of their content as well as their underlying constructs in terms of taking into consideration recent developments in neuroscience and that sort of thing. And there are some projects on the way at the moment. For example, there's Professor Anne Shuttleworth Edwards, who works from Rhodes University, who has standardized a number of these tests, the Veszler tests in the South African, like, for example, with underprivileged Xhosa speakers. But it is a huge, monumental exercise. We've called on the Health Professions Council to do something. We've called on the universities to do something. It's a huge project, but it needs to be done.
Vanessa, thank you very, very much. I found it really interesting, the background and the problems. Vanessa Gaydon is chairperson of the Educational Psychology Association of South Africa.